there. You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley.
I'm your host, Heath Kerstead, the Communications and Education Specialist at Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. On this episode, we're talking with Elise Bauman from Salem Harvest about the important work they do connecting unused fruit and vegetable crops with hungry Oregonians. In the conservation world, we often think of reducing the waste stream in our use of water and energy, but waste happens all along the supply chain. In particular, I'm thinking of crops that are grown but never make it to the dinner table. This can happen for a number of reasons, which we will learn about today in my conversation with Elise of Salem Harvest. Hi, Elise. Thanks for talking with me today.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Heath. I'm excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Salem Harvest.
I grew up in southern Nevada in a small farming community where things were grown for mostly animals. But we were so far away from every place, like the nearest real grocery store was about a two-hour drive, that if you wanted to eat, you grew it yourself. And when you grow stuff yourself, you don't want to waste it. So I was very early on involved with growing and not wasting what you grow. So I went off to college, did a thing down in Arizona, decided that was too hot and dry, came up to Oregon. When I moved up, I was just so surprised with how much is grown right here in the valley. And you can go pick it yourself. I was amazed with You Pick Orchards. I was like, this is so awesome. I have got to go do it. And so we'd always all summer long go around you picking. And then I did not start. I'm not the founder of Salem Harvest. I came in a year or two after it got started. When we grew from a backyard organization into more of a farm rescue organization, rescuing crops on farms, and jumped in at that level, knowing that there's thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds of food a year going to waste. And then there's people in the cities and more of the urban areas that can't access that food. We take volunteers out and we harvest food and we get it to hungry families all over the mid-Willamette Valley.
That's so fantastic. What an important thing to do. And so that segues really nicely into my next question, which is, what's the mission of Salem Harvest and what do you do in service of that mission?
The mission is very clear and stated pretty shortly with feeding hungry families by harvesting food that will go to waste. And we accomplish that by taking other families, families and people who want to serve and people who need food and people who enjoy outdoors, just volunteers in general. We take folks out to the farms to harvest the food on the farm. So the crops that aren't going to be used for one reason or another, they come out and they harvest. They can take home up to half of what they harvest home with them to feed their families, their loved ones. And then the other half, or the majority, trust me, sometimes we harvest so much that families don't want to take it all home or half home even. You know what I mean? They're like, no, we can't take any more. And so the majority gets donated to partners or that we work with, distribution partners that we work with here in the valley. We work with 38 different distribution partners here in the valley.
I mean, that's a lot of work just to get yourself coordinated with all those different organizations.
Correct. It is an undertaking. One of the, our biggest partner, though, is Marion Polk Food Share, and they have 100+ meal sites, pantries, shelters that they work with. They're just one of our 38, not, you know what I mean? So, but we work with like other places like Keep the Canby Center, smaller folks or smaller places around town like Hope Station or St. Francis Shelter, elementary schools, Head Start, places like that as well. So we do serve a wide range of different distribution places, partners.
Let's talk now about hunger. And could you give us a little information about what the state of hunger is in the Mid-Willamette Valley?
I'll do my best. It's always changing, as you probably can guess. Before I get into the numbers, I wanted to make sure that we discuss what is hunger and how does that different than food insecurity. So the dictionary defines hunger as a craving or urgent need for food. So we've all experienced hunger in one sense of the word, one way or another, maybe even at this moment because we haven't had lunch yet. It's more food insecurity that we all haven't experienced. And so the United States Department of Agriculture defines food insecurity as a lack of access at times to enough food to lead a healthy, active life. For me, the way I think of food insecurity is the not knowing where your next meal is coming from or when that meal may be. Also knowing that you might have food right now, but come the end of the month or the end of the week, you know that you don't have enough funds or enough ways or a way to get food. And so it's the kind of the not knowing where food is coming from or not having enough to lead a healthy life that leads into the word food insecure or food insecurity. There's different key drivers for food insecurity. And again, the USDA points out unemployment, poverty, and income shocks are drivers for why folks might be insecure. But here in the Mid-Willamette Valley, 10% of the population report being food insecure at this time. So this includes children and adults. And so just imagine that every one out of every 10 people or 35,000 people in our community don't have enough food to live active, healthy lives. Yeah, and so if we're just looking at kids, 17 years and younger, 13% are food insecure. The way I gauge or learn about food insecurity in our community, besides going to look up numbers on the online, I hear about it in the fields when volunteers come out to harvest. I love to hear the appreciation that they have for the opportunity that they have in order to get food, nice, healthy, fresh produce. But it all starts, you know, I've heard, you know, reduced hours at work, funds are being diverted to pay for increased medical supplies or medical expenses, even, you know, people who have aging parents and they're having to take on helping them financially as well. Large gamut of reasons of why people are finding themselves without enough funds to pay for all the expenses they already need, like rent and you know, electrical bills and everything else, medical bills, and why they, at the end of the day, don't have enough for food. And then it's also very surprising last summer. You don't really think about it. You know, pandemic's over. Yay, we should all be great and happy and all back to our regular lives. But last summer, there was a higher usage of food pantries than there was ever was during the pandemic. There were more people in line, waiting in lines that I saw in cars and just waiting in line to get into food pantries to get food for themselves last summer than there ever was during the 2020-2021 era. We work with about 60 to 65 different farms here in the valley throughout the year. That varies from small farms or CSA farms or educational farms. We get to harvest it. We did last year. Hopefully they still have the program this year. Over at Chemeketa at the Ag Hub, they have about a third of an acre, a half an acre right there on campus that they grow fruits and vegetables on for sale at the farmer's market that happens there at Chemeketa on Wednesdays. You know, different size, all the way from commercial-sized farms that are harvesting to feed the nation, all the way down to, you know, CSA farms and small farms that are growing for farmer's markets and things like that.
a lot of different groups and people that you're working with. I just can't imagine the amount of effort it takes to coordinate everything so that you actually have successful harvests and get that to the people who need the food. What causes on-farm food waste?
Well, this topic I could talk on for hours and hours because there's so many reasons. Every year there's a new reason of why something can't be harvested. But it all comes down, it always comes down to, does it make sense for the farmer to harvest this and make sense financially as well as fits into their time schedule of when things need to be, you know, harvested and out of the ground and planting the next thing. And so there's lots of reasons, but I'll name a few. So, for instance, zucchini squash, it never knows when it's going to be done, you know, growing. It can continue to grow and grow and grow, but farmers need to move on to the cover crop for the fall or the winter. And so the crop has to be tilled at some point, but there's always squash still there. So we have farmers who call us up and have us come out and harvest the last of their zucchini squash or their summer squash just a few days before they come in and till the land in order to prepare for the next harvest. There's also pollinators. Every, you know, many types of fruit need a pollinator of that same kind of fruit. So, for instance, pears. Bartlett pear orchards here in the valley, and they have to have other types of pears planted in a mix with them in order to have a successful, you know, strong harvest of Bartlett pears. But the pears that are planted as pollinators, like Comice or D'Anjou or, you know, these delicious, more fall winter type of pear, they aren't as popular, or they harvest, they get ripe later, and it's just not feasible to go hopping around the orchard finding these few trees. I'll quote, put quote, air quotes around few trees, in order to then find a market for it and take time out of their day of when they're supposed to be doing hazelnuts at that time. And so it's just a real challenge to try to, you know, use these 30 to 40,000 pounds of pears that are on these, you know, trees that are just dotted around in the orchard. For us, that makes total sense. I mean, that's a lot of pears, and that can feed a lot of families and, you know, healthy, delicious pears, and there's nothing wrong with them other than there's not a market for them. It's not the right time, where the farmers moved on to something else. And then the crazy thing is these industry standards. So there's an industry standard for all sorts of things, like, for example, cucumbers. The last time you went to the grocery store and found a crooked cucumber, right? When's the last time that happened?
No.
They're all straight.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Yeah.
I know, right? And have you ever grown a cucumber, like had a cucumber plant and had every cucumber grow perfectly straight?
Certainly not.
They're all curly, they're crooked, they bend, you know. But those don't get to go to the grocery store because my belief is they don't fit in the box right. And so if a cucumber gets to be too big or it's too small or it's crooked, it's yellow on the bottom, so many reasons why it's not going to get harvested, because it takes time to harvest those and they're not going to get paid for them. So why not just leave them right there on the ground rather than paying to pick them up and transport them to the processor or, you know, the place where they get packaged up to go to the grocery store? They're not going to get paid for them, so why spend the time? So, you know, we, Salem Harvest, gets invited out to pick up cucumbers that are just a little bit crooked. They're not bad. They're not going to, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. Chop them up and nobody would know about your cucumber's crooked past, I promise. You know, there's just all these reasons of why, you know, the pears are too small, the eggplants are too big, the apples aren't red enough, the red peppers are too green. All these reasons of people's pickiness, I think it comes down to people's pickiness or grocery stores' pickiness. You see what I'm saying? There's like so many reasons, and every year I find another one of why something can't be harvested. And so we're there helping farmers get food that's perfectly good out of their fields, and they don't have to pay for that to get it harvested. And farmers also get a donation tax credit, so a crop donation tax credit here in Oregon of 15% of the wholesale value of the crop. It costs a lot to pay people to go out there and actually hand harvest them. So when a grower sees there's quite a few blueberries still in the bush, we'll come out and hand harvest after a machine, and there's lots of blueberries, and there's nothing wrong with them. They just didn't fall off when the machine jiggled them, and they didn't fall off to be harvested. So, yeah, we harvest a lot of blueberries. I'm going to say that. There are a lot of blueberries we harvest, and they're very popular. Yeah. Blueberries are very popular.
Well, that's actually my next question. You've talked a lot about what crops you've harvested, and I don't know if there are any others you would want to mention besides eggplants, onions, cucumbers, pears, zucchini, blueberries. And then my next, going along with that question is, do you have a sense for what crops are most popular with recipients?
Fruits are most popular with folks. And then those oddities, like last year we harvested it was an actual commercial farm that planted persimmons and just hadn't found a market for them all. And so there were a lot of persimmons that were going to go to waste. And so I was really surprised how many people love persimmons. So it's typically fruits that people love. We harvest cherries, caneberries, plums, broccoli, cauliflower sometimes. Watermelon is great. That one's very popular as well. Not too often, but we have a great grower here that grows some delicious watermelons. Squash, grapes. Grapes are rather popular now, too. There's an insurgence of table grapes being grown in the valley. I would like to call it an insurgence because I want people to start growing them. Hint, hint, if anybody's out there, you know, with a large piece of property or 3 to 5 acres and they want to start something interesting, table grapes. They're so good and delicious, and they taste so much better than anything that's being shipped from Peru or Chile.
What I'm often thinking about is what time of year you're harvesting. And so I imagine that the volunteer harvests happen during a certain time of the year, like over the season.
Correct.
So when is your busy season? And then what do you work on at Salem Harvest when it isn't harvest season?
Yeah, so our season as far as harvesting generally starts, sometimes we'll luck out and get a field of strawberries the end of May, 1st of June. But it's typically by mid-June, we've got, you know, cherries ready and we're picking cherries and those sort of things. And then we're harvesting. Last year, we did not stop harvesting until, I want to say, like the 13th or 14th of December. So
wow.
We had, I know, and people are like, what in the heck are you harvesting that late? Apples. Believe it or not, apples can freeze on the tree, freeze, because it's below freezing. They can get down to like 26.5 degrees, 27 degrees before they there's a structural damage to the apple. And so those early winter apples like Granny Smith and Gold Rush, they can hang on the tree pretty late. So we were harvesting, like I said, mid-December last year. So in between our busiest months, if I would say, would have to be July and September, early October, just in July because we have cherries and lots of blueberries during that time period. And then in September, man, everything is ripe in September. Everything's got to be harvested in September. So many things. September, early October, just vegetables, fruits, you name it. It's almost everything's ripe during that time period. So those are our busy, and that's our harvest season time is June through December. And then on our off-season time, you know, January through May, June, early June, we're preparing to get out there and harvest. So we're getting our supplies in order. We're doing our raising of funds to make our project work. We're building relationships with growers and volunteers and community, you know, organizations, those sort of things. And then this is our second year actually taking education in for elementary school kids. So this year we are at Swiegel Elementary and Washington Elementary in their third grade classrooms. teaching them about where food comes from and how it grows, how it gets to their tables, those sort of things. So 6 weeks in a row, we go in once a week with a different lesson. And we're educating 190 kids about agriculture here in the Valley during this period of time. So this is our week three. And then we're also involved in a great project. This is the second year for it as well. It's an elementary ag fest, and we're a partner with Marion Polk Food Shares Youth Farm, the Chemeketa Community College Ag Hub on campus, as well as SNAP Ed ran through Oregon State University's Extension Office and 4-H through that same area, as well as a few other partners. And we come together for 4 days, and we have 8 different elementary schools that bring their third graders to campus. And we have 6 or 8 different stations that kids go through and learn something specific about agriculture or food or healthy eating, that sort of thing. And so it's tons of fun, and we get to reach 525 kids that way as well. So we find that, you know, education of where your food comes from is going to lead to caring more about your food, eating healthier, and then like noticing of like, wow, when I don't eat this, coming back around here to, you know, reserve, you know, using our resources well, we're hoping that like kids will be like learning what goes into growing something. Like, you know, the water that it takes, the resources in the soil and the energy in the soil that it draws out when you grow a carrot or grow something. It pulls nutrients out of the soil, not to mention all the time and energy of humans put into growing something. When you don't eat that, it's just wasted. It's all bottled up in the food. You know, and it's great growing the food, but if you don't actually consume the food and turn that energy into something in your body, it's all lost. It's for naught. So you've just thrown out all the water, all the soil nutrients, all the fertilizers, and time and energy for nothing. You've just wasted it. So we're hoping to, you know, share some of that education, and we share that with our volunteers as well. But yeah.
You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. I'm your host, Heath Kerstead, and today I'm talking with Elise Bauman, the Executive Director of Salem Harvest. Well, you just started to talk about conservation, and now I'm going to ask a question that's related to that. Marion Soil and Water Conservation District helps people find the resources they need to conserve natural resources. How does Salem Harvest play a role in conservation?
The way I see it is, just through the process of like consuming and actually using the natural resources that it takes to grow food here, you know, anywhere, just the water, the soil nutrients, the fertilizers, the fossil fuels that are used on farms, you know, tractors and those sort of things. You know, we could just not grow anything and maybe save some of those items, but we need food. People need food to eat in order to survive, but we also don't need to just waste it. We don't need to leave it in the field to rot. Just wasting away. That's not the purpose of growing food. The purpose of growing food is to feed people. And so that's how we help out, is we take that food off to families who need it, either through distribution points or volunteers who come out to harvest. They can take that home to eat and use those resources.
Yes, it's so great. What a success. Do you have any stories that would help our listeners understand how rewarding this work can be?
Oh, yes. I have a favorite right now. I have many favorites. You know, we have families that you get to know folks over the time, and, you know, the families who have been struggling, and then over, you know, then they, a year or two later, they come back out and they're like, Nope, I don't need any food this year. I am just here to donate it back. It was so wonderful to be here when I needed that opportunity. But a story that really sticks out to me usually involves kids because I love kids and they're so dang cute. this last fall, I don't know if anybody else recognized or saw this, but there were just, it was like an apple year, like so many apples. We harvested over 150,000 pounds of apples last year. It was just ridiculous. So many apples. And we had a couple of young families come out, and this one young boy and his mom came out many times, several different times. And I'm like, you know, what's going on? Why so many apples? And they're like, well, we like apples. We don't take very many home. We've had plenty of apples now. We don't take many home, but we like to come out and enjoy being here and helping. And he was just so cute. And he was a boy that was going to school. And I think he's moved on to Waldo this year. He was a fifth grader at Washington Elementary School. And he just loved to chat and talk about what's going on and all these sort of things. And we had so many apples last year that we were directly delivering them to elementary schools and high schools and, you know, middle schools. We had a big list, and, you know, 2 days in a row, we just drove apples around, dropping off banana boxes full of apples so that families could stop and pick up apples to take home, or they could be served, you know, at after school programs or put into Thanksgiving boxes that went home with families. Mm-hmm. And so at Washington Elementary School, when we pulled up with the boxes of apples, he was one of the fifth graders that came to help unload. And he's like, he recognized me and he's like, oh, it's so good to see you. And I'm like, yeah, it's great to see you too. And he saw that they were apples in the box. And he's like, are these apples I got to harvest? And I said, yeah, actually they are. You got to harvest these apples, and now they're here for kids that you have in your classrooms. They're going to go into Thanksgiving boxes for families to take home that don't have enough food for the holiday. And I could just see right then, like in his eyes, he's like, you know, just the acknowledgement, just the surprise, the I did this kind of look in his eyes, and how proud he was of being able to help others, people he knew right then and there. Like, it was just having that come full circle was really cool. So yeah, it's just those little things that you see, and then you know that these families that are out there harvesting, you know that they're going to take that home and make great things out of it, put it in their freezer, can it, do whatever. And they really stretch that, the food that they do take home in order to feed themselves throughout the year, just not for dinner that night or whatever. They really do take advantage and, you know, use that opportunity well in order to really help their families.
How can our listeners support the important work of Salem Harvest?
First off, you know, if you jump on our website, learn out more about what we do. We're at salemharvest.org. See where you can fit in. Come out and volunteer if you'd like. You know, you can always donate if you have more funds than time, for sure. We have a donate button there. We have a great fundraiser coming up. Our Race to Save the Harvest is our annual fundraiser. It's a fun, family fun 3K, 5K, walk, run, hop, skip, jump, whatever you like, through a course at Minto Island Park. It's more than a run, though. We have a great time with I'm a Blueberry comes and passes out all sorts of things for blueberry goodness, and we eat blueberries. And yes, Ima eats blueberries. Kids ask me that all the time. She's a blueberry, but she eats blueberries? And I'm like, she does. She likes blueberries very much. We have tables for our sponsors and organizations here in the community that would be a support to different families, a resource kind of center. We have yard games people can play, free face paintings. We have raffles. Every participant gets a raffle ticket and can win fabulous prizes. just a fun day to come down and enjoy time in the park with other families and other people who enjoy being out and about in the support of, you know, feeding hungry families and reducing food waste here in our community. So that's definitely a fun way to get involved. Go to runsignup.com and hunt for a Race to Save the Harvest.
And finally, we ask all of the people we interview this one question, and it is, what is one action you would encourage people to take in relation to the work you do?
The first action is, when you buy food, eat the food, don't throw it away. You know, food waste is the highest, you know, food waste, once the food comes home, believe it or not, is higher than the food waste on farms.
Wow.
And I think the total right now is we're close to 35-40% of food grown in the United States is wasted. And a good portion of that is on the consumer's end after it's been purchased. So if you buy food, make sure you eat it. The second one is when you're shopping local, when you're going to your farmer's market, when you're buying the fresh local produce, don't be afraid to purchase those crooked cucumbers, the lopsided apples, or a pear that's supposed to be brown but is green this year. Just go ahead and buy them. They're going to taste the same. They're going to be very delicious. Don't be afraid of that. Stop being so picky.
All right. I've been talking with Elise Bauman about the organization Salem Harvest, and I'm your host, Heath Kerstead, Communications and Education Specialist with Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share the light with us. We're grateful for a community of conservation-minded folks who know the importance of partnerships. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit our website for follow-up information. I'd also like to mention that June 11th is Homeschool Day at Ankeny Hill Nature Center. Join us and many of our partners for a fun, hands-on look at plants and pollinators. Another event coming up is our Conservation Club tour, focused on large and small-scale riparian restoration projects with our partners from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde on June 18th. All this and more can be found on the Marion SWCD website at www.marionswcd.net. If this conversation sparked your interest in Salem Harvest, visit salemharvest.org and attend their upcoming fundraiser, The Race to Save the Harvest, a family fun 3K and 5K run or walk at Minto Brown Island Park, happening on June 29th. It's more than just a run, it's a party. If you'd like what you heard on the Conservation Spotlight today, tune in on the third Wednesday of the next month to KMUZ at 100.7 or 88.5 FM at 8 a.m. during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening and keep your light shining.